And now here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
I just heard the head of the Air Force, U.S. Air Force, say that if the soldiers of Iraq really understood what was in store for them, they would not want to fight. They would leave. Now, this is the tactic that we described yesterday called shock and awe. And we have to start talking in military terms on some level. And I'm going to do it because I'm about as qualified as anybody on the air today to do it and be entertaining doing it. Now, I could bring in generals, which, by the way, you're welcome, KFI. Dale Dye, who used to call our show and listen to it, we had him on the air after 9/11. We had him on the air after Saving Private Ryan came out. Oh, well, all of a sudden, everybody heard him on the radio, said he's a pretty good radio commentator. So now he's on with Handel, he's on with John and Ken, and he don't want to give me the time of day. No problem, Dale. You go off and do what you got to do. Make that money. He's a big radio star now. Janice calls him up today, and he says, well, I gotta go on with Frank and Ben or Ed and Ken. He didn't even know what the hell the name of the show was he's going on. I got to go on with these two jackasses, and I don't know. He's all busy. That's all right, Dale. We still love you, man. In any event, Saddam Hussein, somebody asked me today, they said, what do you think Saddam's doing right now? And people, everybody almost, you know, everyone basically says this, oh, he's getting ready to leave. Oh, he's getting ready to pack up and go. He is waiting for the last minute. No, he ain't. What Saddam Hussein is doing today is exactly what Adolf Hitler did at the end of World War II. He's getting himself ready for history and for martyrdom. He also really doesn't understand what he's up against. I know he's a real smart guy. I know that. I'm the last guy to say that Hussein's stupid. The last guy. I'm the last guy to say that he's crazy. I don't think he's crazy. I think he's a sort of borderline personality. He's narcissistic, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's insane. I think the man is deluded. And after so many years of having the power of life and death over so many people, just one man having the power of life and death over 25 million people, after year after year after year of having people kiss his ass and tell him what a marvelous, wonderful leader he is, and have people kiss his ass and tell him what a great leader of the future pan-Arabic state he would be, and people kissing his ass and telling him what he's the next Abdul Nasser, he's the next Ayatollah Khomeini. He started believing it. And after the Gulf War, why wouldn't he think he was destined? He took the best we had to offer, so he thought, during the Gulf War, and he's still standing. He's underestimating the way Hitler underestimated. And when I say that, Adolf Hitler, for all of his brilliance, didn't really know what was coming. He had no idea. He had no grasp of the tactical reality, the operational reality of his army. His soldiers, his generals said, we can't. We don't have the divisions. Hitler would say, move this division into that area. That's all we have to do. We'll just move this division into that area. And they would say, we used to have a division. They're all dead now. Well, you're nothing but a coward. You're nothing but a traitor. I'm going to replace you, and I'm going to get a general to do the job who is loyal to the Fuhrer. And he'd fire guys left and right, and then they'd put another guy in there, and the guy said, all right, there's no division. And here's the other plan that I have. We'll ring Berlin with the tank corps here and tank corps there. He said, there is no more tank corps. They've been destroyed. Now, Hussein may have a different kind of delusion. He may believe that his people will rise up at the very last minute and fight with him. Because I truly believe that he thinks the Iraqi people consider him to be the far better option over American soldiers. It's a good question. I said it yesterday. I think I said it the day before, and I'm going to say it again. The way we lose this war is if the Iraqis see us as a worse option than Saddam Hussein. The way we win is if the Iraqi people see us as a better option than Saddam Hussein. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. I don't care how many smart bombs we got. I could care less. I could care less how many nukes we have. You will never win a war if you don't win the people, to some degree. Never. Because if you got to fight a guerrilla war, where every time you turn around, somebody is some civilians walking up and sticking a hand grenade up your rear end, and you don't know whether to flip or fly, whether to sit and have a cup of coffee or dive into a hole in the ground. That's no way to live, and that's the way our guys were fighting in Vietnam. That's why that war could not be won, would not be won, and wasn't. This one, we have a possibility of winning simply if the Iraqi people decide. That, you know, these Americans that are coming in, these guys are way, way preferable to Saddam Hussein. I'm betting they're going to say that. Still doesn't mean it's going to be a short war. Some people are thinking 2 weeks. Forget it. It ain't going to be 2 weeks. It's going to be 2 weeks by the time we get a good tactical grip on the situation in Baghdad, maybe another 2 weeks before we're actually able to take that city. Now, that's a city the size of Chicago, so you figure it out. And that's the population of Chicago, a landmass the size of Los Angeles. So basically, it's like taking L.A. There's 5 million people in a landmass the size of Los Angeles. What do you think? The Battle of Berlin took a month. Well, maybe not that long. I'm making things up because I figure nobody's going to check on it. I really don't know how long the battle. I just got done reading the book, and I can't. I know that from the time the Russians, let's see, January through April, they got to Berlin. I think it was a few weeks. Saddam Hussein today believes that he has a shot. He believes that he is standing on the brink of the greatest victory of his life. He believes that perhaps he's another Frederick the Great who stood at the abyss and was able to turn the tide. Hitler believed that he stood at the abyss when was able to turn the tide. All great military lunatics believe that as they stand at the abyss, they can turn the tide. Why should Hussein be any different? There's something about the narcissistic personality that makes for a very charismatic leader and one who, has the capability to actually administer over a whole country. Sure, they look like they love Saddam. Do you ever see the pictures of the women throwing flowers at Hitler? They loved his ass. So he stands tonight believing that he's preparing himself for a point in history that even if he dies, the Arab people will not soon forget him. That he was the courageous Arab who stood up against the colonialists when all the other Arabs were gutless to do it. If you look at it that way, it's pretty sexy, if you ask me. Yeah, seriously, he's the one guy, of all the Arab leaders, he's the one that stood up to the colonialists, the British, the Americans, and said, I'm not going to let you do it. You're not going to tell me what to do. Unfortunately, he's a mass murderer and a dictator, but why quibble? He's still a pretty solid guy. Unfortunately, he is one of the great murderers and torturers in history, but why split hairs? To the Arab people, he's a hero. Now, I got a lot to say today about my friends in the September 10th anti-war movement. I got a lot to say today because I got a great email here from a guy named Scott. It's a very intelligently written email. He asks, and let me just say, he asks, quote, Phil, why do you have such... Thank you. I had to dump myself. That's like the third time this week I've had to dump what I said. In any event, I'm going to talk about Scott's email. And one other thing. Yesterday I said to you guys, the next five days to ten days, do not believe any story you hear until you've double or triple checked it. Well, why do you say that, Phil? Because the media right now, the guys that are reporting the news, are in a state of what I call level one dumb. They're at level one dumbass, which is they report every piece of crap they get, they report it as truth. Today they reported that Tariq Aziz had defected to Turkey. You didn't hear that one? They reported that Tariq Aziz defected to Turkey. And everybody was running around this morning, hey, did you hear about the guy from, guess what, he didn't. Then there was the story that thousands of Iraqi soldiers are now giving up. They're surrendering. Bullcrap. About 17 so far that I've been able to count. Don't worry about it. All right, 1-800-449-8686 is the phone number here in the Phil Hendry Show. And one other little point, because I was asked to do this. I do a comedy show, and people are aware of that. And then when we stop down and we actually do news talk or what I call, you know, commentary, some people have asked, would you please let people know that that's what you're now going to do? Because the assumption is that you people listening are about as stupid as the day is long. So if you'd like to know, the program directors and general managers of, and basically the radio industry of America believes you to be very stupid. So let me say this. I'm going to be doing a lot of commentary about the war and not a whole lot of comedy, okay? So in case you didn't get it or get the memo. And now for my next joke. A guy goes into a bar. Okay, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
You know, everybody's talking about this, what is it, 48-hour deadline? Why don't you get off of that kick? What is it with everybody with this 48-hour deadline? You love that? 3 more hours, and then the deadline is passed, and nothing's going to happen. Guy ain't leaving, and we ain't attacking. I want to drop the news on you as gently as I can. We will probably not go in till tomorrow or Friday. I told you Friday. Friday night. By Friday night, I mean their Friday night, not our Friday night. Our Friday night is their Saturday or something. It's just kind of amusing today with 2 more hours, and the guy's not going anywhere. What are you talking about? It's like counting down, you know, New Year's or something. It's going to happen. Don't worry. I mean, the countdown's going to happen. The guy ain't going to go anywhere. In other words, 2 more hours before the possibility of the end of the world. It's like waiting for the apocalypse. It's like waiting for the countdown. They said the earthquake would take place. It ain't going to happen, huh? Yeah, the resurrection of Jesus in about an hour. It's just before the rapture is on its way. And now to my fine friends in the September 10th anti-war movement. People say, why do you call it September 10th, Phil? I said, because they're going backwards. They're going backwards. Now let me, once again give my anti-war credentials. I was in a chapter of the Students for a Democratic Society at Pasadena City College. I stood there at MacArthur's Park with 30,000 other people, Angelenos, to watch the great Ron Kovic, one of the greatest public speakers I've ever heard in my life, the injured Vietnam veteran whose life was told in the movie Born on the 4th of July. I heard him speak, one of the most compelling, moving speeches I've ever heard. He had people in tears. Myself included. Kent State, I was a senior in high school. Saw the picture on the front page of the girl leaning over the kid who'd been shot down by the National Guard. Nixon, war criminal. I heard it all, man. Johnson, war criminal. Napalm, the little girl running down the road in Vietnam with her clothes burned off of her. Scarred for life. She now lives in America, by the way. She's alive and well. She lives in America. Anybody remember that? We won a Pulitzer Prize. The picture of the man getting his head blown off by the Saigon chief of police. Famous picture of the Viet Cong getting shot. The anti-war demonstrations in New York, 500,000 strong. San Francisco, 300,000 strong. The Capitol Mall, 300,000 strong. The people surrounding the Pentagon, the Vietnam vets throwing their medals over the fence of the Pentagon, the Vietnam veterans against the war, the hard hats beating up the hippies in New York. Country was coming apart. It seemed like it. To me, at the age of 17, 18, 19, it was one big party. We were having a good time. If you were young in those days, it was just a big party. I'm sure if you were like 45, 50, you thought the end of the world was coming. The reason why I was against that war is because of what I just told you. The Vietnamese people would rather have taken their chances with a communist Vietnamese than an American so-called liberator. We did not have the people on our side. No way. No way, no way, no way, my man. This war, there's a possibility they may be. Why? Because the only individual they've seen oppressing their ass over the last few years is another Arab. Now, naturally, they've been sold the bill of goods. America, America, America. America's bad. America's this. America's that. And it is a bill of goods. Let me read to you a paragraph, the first paragraph from a letter I got here from a guy named Scott. Nice guy. Smart guy. He says, Phil, why do you have such a big heart on for the war? Do you honestly believe all the crap being floated by the White House? Scott, do you honestly believe all the crap being floated by the anti-war movement? Do you honestly believe all of that tired, shop-worn, colonialist, imperialist, war-for-oil crap? And when I say war for oil, you people seem it seems like you guys want to give the impression you think a war for oil is bad. And you know as well as I do, you don't believe that, man. It just sounds good. Then he goes on to give a list. Bush claims Iraq is in league with al-Qaeda. No substantiated association between Iraqi regime and al-Qaeda, according to CIA 2002. This is one of the most incredible arguments that the September 10th anti-war movement uses. No substantiated link between al-Qaeda. So in other words, the guy is free to go and kill all kinds of people so long as he doesn't have a substantiated link with al-Qaeda. Is that it? And then, of course, they turn on and tell you, yes, but what business is it of ours? It became our business when we became victims of the terror on September the 11th, 2002. And just so we could put it all to rest, just so you guys won't ever have to be troubled by this, I don't care what organization he supports. He supports terrorists. I don't care if it's al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Girl Scouts of America, the Pasadena Bowling League, the Alice Cooper Fan Club. I don't care which group. It doesn't matter to me. Does that make me a war criminal because I'm attacking poor Saddam Hussein because he didn't have any money given? He wasn't giving money to al-Qaeda. He was giving money to Hamas. How utterly naive can you be? How utterly childlike can you be? So, just so we never have to have this argument again, I don't care whether the guy had substantiated links with al-Qaeda, you poor, simple-minded people. I care that the guy is a known sponsor, funder, aider, and abettor of terrorists. And guess what? Somebody attacked my country. 3,000 people are dead. Saddam's the big, fat target on the horizon for me. Okay, fat ass, better bend over and wait, because it's coming. Well, I'm not even al-Qaeda. Guess what? You're the first guy I saw. Well, why don't you go get that long-haired, bearded freak that Bin Laden? I'm going after him. Don't worry about it. His day is coming. Don't even worry about it. Time for you, though, man. Well, there's no substantiated link between me. Look, folks, al-Qaeda and people like that and Hussein, they don't file incorporation papers with the state of California or New York or Florida, okay? You can't look it up on your internet. There's no memo. There's no actuarial tables. There's no paper trail. Aha! Here's a memo from Saddam Hussein to Osama bin Laden. Bin, how you been, baby? Everything all right there in western Pakistan? I hear you've been down under the weather. We're getting the ball games nice. DSS, ha ha ha, I told you so. Cub game on right now, gotta go. Sign Saddam. What the hell do you think is going on? What is it with you guys, man? Do you just need something to protest? I got one to protest. Protest this, the murder of your countrymen. And something else I predicted started to happen yesterday. I said, we are going to become, if we don't watch it, so weak-minded that when we get attacked by a terrorist, it's no longer going to be the terror organization's fault. It's going to be Bush's fault. And sure enough, I got a brain surgeon call on my show yesterday. He says, the only person responsible for terror attacks is Bush. Another one of those simple-minded Vietnam-era arguments. Another one of those dopey, one-dimensional, very shallow arguments that are circa 1969 about the war criminal American president. So we only have ourselves to blame. Which means, guys, the next time 3,000 people get butchered up right in front of your very eyes, just sit down and take it. That's what the September 10th people would like you to do. I hate to break the news. It's too late. We're not gonna. You guys go ahead and have your protest because I think it's your constitutional right. I guess you're going to do civil disobedience. Remember that when you do, you draw more police away from protecting people's lives and more police have to cart your fat ass into a paddy wagon. It's the Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. We'll be right back. 866.
This is the Phil Hendry Show. We do a lot of comedy on this show, but in the event of war, we do a lot of commenting, and we don't need any phone calls. Don't worry about it. I know people have been calling, but they're... I mean, I appreciate it, too. But I got it under control. I mean, you could call. I don't know what you could possibly add. Because I could talk for days about this stuff. This is the, you got to understand, so this is the easiest kind of talk radio in the world to do for me. The usual kind of character stuff that we do, the usual kind of theatrical stuff we do, it takes a lot of work. This stuff, talking and taking calls, it's a breeze. A breeze and a half. Now, getting back to my pal's letter here, this guy Scott, who sent me an email saying, Henry, what's your big problem? Why do you want this war so much? Everybody knows that Iraq isn't in league with Al-Qaeda. Well, I already answered that one. I don't care. You got that? Is that clear? I don't care. The guy has funded and sponsored terrorists. He's going down, and that's all there is to that. Our country, for the first time in history, became the object, the target of a significantly brutal terrorist attack, so we are responding. And we're responding against a guy that couldn't have been more deserving. What is it with everybody? All of a sudden, everybody wants to be fair with Saddam. How dare we attack Saddam? It's not fair. This freaking guy, guy's a mass murderer. I love it. I think it's hysterical. It's one more of those little chinks in the logical armor of the September 10th anti-war people. You're what, man? You're laying down your body for who? Hussein? No, we're doing it for the Iraqi people. Okay, so let me get this straight, just so I'm clear. You don't want us to go in and possibly liberate the Iraqi people. You'd rather they continue to live under the UN sanctions, which you yourself say are really bad. Is that it? Yeah. It doesn't make any sense, man. Well, it's the best I can do right now. Yeah, I figured as much. Number two, he says, Bush says Iraq has nuclear weapons and trying to get bomb material. Prior to 91, Iraq did have a nuclear weapons program, but they do not any longer. The CIA does not accept the fraudulent documents from Niger or the aluminum tubes. In other words, he says that Bush is making up or is misinterpreting Iraq's present so-called capability for nuclear weapons. He goes on to say that the UN inspectors need intelligence to locate weapons of mass destruction, but they haven't been getting any help from the United States. Okay, sorry about that. And then number three, because I'm going to put these all together. Number three, administration claims of mobile weapons labs were deemed not credible. Okay, Scott, Saddam Hussein has nerve gas. He has biological weapons. He has radiological. By his own admission, he has said, oh, well, we only have them for defensive purposes. By his own admission, he has said, we will no longer produce chemical weapons by presidential decree 2002. Come on, pal. Is this an exercise in just trying to outwit the kid here? Is that all it is? You gotta have to do better than this. You talk about regurgitating old arguments. The guy has admitted that he's got stuff. And according to the Geneva Protocol of 1925, because my friend Scott further makes this case that the Iraqis only used gas in military combat and did not gas their own people. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to have a big disappointment for you on that. But before I do, according to Geneva, using gas in warfare, period, is a violation of international law and a war crime, whether it's in combat or anything. War crime. Now I know what you're going to say. You're going to come back with, well, America gave them the gas in the first place. Oh, okay. Well, as long as you're pitching them here, man, I'm going to try and we're knocking them out of the park. Boston, Massachusetts. A delegation of three United States physicians, this was 1988, October 22nd, a delegation of three U.S. physicians representing the Boston-based Physicians for Human Rights traveled to Turkey October 7th to the 16th of 1988 and concluded that chemical weapons were used by Iraq in attacks on Kurdish villages on August 25th, 1988. In total, 60 to 80,000 people were estimated to have fled from northern Iraq to southeastern Turkey in the wake of these attacks. The physicians conducted in-depth videotape interviews. They examined alleged victims. They administered a systematic 14-page questionnaire prepared in English and Kurdish. Reliable testimony confirmed the use of chemical weapons, and that testimony included bombing runs by low-flying jets, followed by the appearance of dark yellow clouds. Death came suddenly to birds and domestic fowl. Humans died within minutes. Refugees who'd been within 75 to 500 meters of bomb bursts described skin blistering, which began within 30 minutes of exposure. The team included Dr. Robert Cook, senior research fellow at Georgetown, Howard Hu, internist and specialist in environmentalist medicine at Harvard. I mean, I can name all these guys. You don't want me to do this. These were Kurdish inhabitants testifying to the gas attack by Iraq. And this guy that writes me the email says, well, those were Iranians that dumped the gas on them. Why don't you go to northern Iraq and tell them that they're mistaken? They didn't get gassed by the Iraqis. Because you may be interested to know that the 15th anniversary of the chemical attack carried out by the Iraqi government on the town of Halabja has been or will be observed, the 15th anniversary. So the people in that town are observing a Holocaust. And I got this guy writing me emails saying they're imagining things. They're seeing things. Don't you just love Americans? Iraq threatens the security of the U.S. This is his argument against this following statement. Iraq threatens the security of the U.S. Even when they had a chemical arsenal, they didn't use them in the first Gulf War. And after a decade of destruction of their WMD by inspectors, why would they use whatever they might have now? Number one, Scott, they still have chemical weapons by their own admission. That decade of destruction by the United Nations, obviously, didn't do too much good. Number two, they didn't use chemical weapons in the Gulf War because they were told, had they used chemical weapons, we would use tactical nuclear weapons. That was a message that was loud and clear from then-President Bush. Saddam threatens his neighbors. He invaded Iran over a border dispute. He invaded Kuwait. His neighbors fear him so much that they all have to be coerced financially to support a war with Iraq. Absolutely. That's why they fear him. If they give money that supports a war to get him out of there, they become targets. This is World Affairs 101. Saddam Hussein invaded Iran over a border dispute with the backing of fellow Arabs in the U.S. Maybe. Fact of the matter is, if you want to just get rid of Iran and you want to get rid of Kuwait, which, by the way, just so everybody knows, Kuwait has been claimed by Iraq for decades. Decades, long before Saddam Hussein ever was even thought of, long before he was even a bad idea in his daddy's head. Iraq has claimed Kuwait as part of their country. This has been a decade-long dispute. Saddam Hussein's wild fantasy about America saying, yeah, go ahead and take Kuwait. That's his problem, baby, not ours. And you want to know something? Maybe we did say go take Kuwait, and maybe that dumbass took the bait. Maybe he's just too stupid to be operating in a world of grown-ups. I don't know. The fact of the matter is this. Whether you want to rule out Kuwait, you can rule out Iran. Saddam Hussein launched Scud missiles at Israel during the Gulf War. Now, how do you account for that one, Scott? The guy's a menace. He launched Scuds at Saudi Arabia, which I guess you could argue was housing American troops. He launched Scuds at Israel. They hadn't attacked anybody. They were sitting there, sucking their thumbs and minding their own business and restraining themselves. So much for that. And then he goes on to say, above all, are examples of members of the administration taking raw intelligence, interpreting it so it supports their agenda. Well, that's exactly what the anti-war September 10th people do. They take raw material and they twist it and until it supports their agenda. The problem is, and I hate to put it this way, but it's, I don't want to call anybody names, but does the word hypocrisy ring a bell? The hypocrisy surrounding the September 10th people is amazing. I readily admit that the United States has special economic interests tied up in the Middle East. But the fact of the matter is, we've always had economic interests tied up in the Middle East. In 1991, we had tanks within striking reach of the oil fields. We didn't go for them then. There's plenty of wars that we could have fought plenty of times to take the oil fields of the Middle East. So don't give me that old song and a dance about how America's in this just to steal the oil. The fact of the matter is this, and you got to understand business to get it. So write this down, turn on a tape recorder, whatever you need, because here it comes. You ready? In America, business is business. And what that means is what feels good for business, we invest in. What doesn't, we don't. Now, you've seen the stock market take a little bit of a, you know, just kind of get its wind back a little bit here the last few days. Let me tell you why. It is the opinion of the geniuses that run Wall Street, which, of course, they're not geniuses at all. These guys are about as bright as you and me, but they're the guys that run the money, that a victory in Iraq would do two things. It would somehow make the United States a little bit safer in terms of terror. I happen to agree. If nothing else, it shows the terrorists that if we get hit, somebody is going to pay a real big price. If we get hit, some son of a bitch over there is going to bleed. And I would think if the Saudi royal family, just for example, is listening, maybe they'll take a cue. Because, you know, nothing says loving like something from the oven, baby. And if we get hit again, those bedsheet wearers down there look about as good as anybody else to me. What do you think? So maybe you guys ought to take a little bit of a hint. Our country absorbs another terror strike like 9/11 or anything even approaching that. Someone down there is going to get an ass full of boot. And I don't know who. Now, that's good for business. That makes the American business community feel good. Number two, yes, you're right. A victory in Iraq would probably stabilize in the minds of American business the oil supply. Put those two things together. Bingo, you got a stock market that is beginning to creep a little bit higher. It's the first time since 9/11 that the business community in this country has had some confidence that we're finally getting a handle on what happened on September the 11th of 2001. Do we understand why? I think in a lot of ways we do. We are beginning to learn why. But more importantly, right now, for the purposes of safety, for the purposes of securing the safety of our citizens, we're getting a handle on what to do about it when it happens. Somebody hits us and takes down two of our buildings. Maybe the French go and cry. Maybe the Swedes sit down and say, why me? I don't know. What Americans do is we go down and we kick somebody's ass for doing it. And supposedly, we're supposed to feel like pieces of crap. That's a bad thing to do. Why all of my friends in Europe say, hey, you know what? You and your friends in Europe, why don't you go off and have yourself some periwinkles and don't bug me. My brother-in-law, why, here in London, yeah, that's great. They're in London, huh? No wonder the Yanks are kicking the crap out of them over there. They're in London. Why, that stuff wouldn't fly in Europe. I guess it wouldn't fly in Europe, because the only country that's doing anything about it, besides the British, are us. And funny thing, we ain't in Europe. I'm not interested in what they're doing in Europe. I could care less what they're doing in Europe. It was my country and my citizens that were murdered in this most recent foray. Let's just cut to the crap, man. What do I care? I don't care whether he's associated with Al-Qaeda or not. He's a butchering terrorist. He's going down. And what do you think about that? Number two, I personally don't care how the French see things. We ain't doing it the French way. We're doing it the American way. Does that mean kick-ass? Sometimes, yeah. Is that all John Wayne and macho? I suppose. Does it get the job done sometimes? Yeah. You bet. Anyway, we'll take another break here, and then I got some Gulf War documents that are just going to curl your toes, and you know, you're just going to dig it all. You're going to have just a warm feeling. 1-800-449-8686. This is the ordinarily very funny and cutting-edge comedy Phil Hendry Show, but today we're doing commentary, and I'm supposed to tell you that by my boss. The Phil Hendry Show, we'll be right back.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
1-800-449-8686. I can't believe they get this countdown on. It's like 10 minutes, and Saddam better be out of here, or the whole shooting matches. What are you, nuts? You know what we're going to do? We're going to do a countdown. 10, 9, 8, the ball will drop. Saddam's still here. Look at all these nutcases on Iraqi TV. They're jumping up and down. They love him. He's popular. 10 minutes, and if you're not gone by then, well, you'll see. Come on. The guy, I think we can assume he ain't leaving or he's gone. Like, in other words, the guy's in a Winnebago or something. He's on his way to Pakistan. Dear Bin Laden, any chance you can put me up this week on my way to India to see Soki and the girls? Take in some horse racing this weekend? ? Oh, by the way, got the Madden 2003 cheat book. Thanks a lot. Sincerely, Saddam. All right, here is this Gulf War document. The following Iraqi government documents were seized in Kuwait after the Gulf War, exemplifying some of the policies and practices put in place by the Iraqi regime. This was on a website that's operated by the Iraqi Foundation. It is a group of Iraqi dissidents, so I suppose they're lying. They're full of crap or something. But anyway, these are the documents provided by occupation troops. And these are documents purported to have been published by the Iraqi regime in Kuwait. Document 146, pages 1 through 8. Letter to Special Forces 68th Brigade. Instructions on how to break into the houses of Kuwaitis by breaking down doors and windows in the event they do not cooperate. Instructions on how to burn the house to the ground in their presence. And how to send family members off to Basra prison. Document 146, 1 through 11, orders from Saddam Hussein, dated August 24, 1990. Anyone concealing foreigner is guilty of spying. The penalty for such spying is execution. Order from Special Forces 68th Brigade, in compliance with directive, Saddam Hussein, Pakistani professionals, including professors, engineers, managers, and scientists, to be detained. Other Pakistanis to be deported. How to destroy five houses, setting them on fire, the detention of 14 suspects, instructions for the destruction of the oil fields of Kuwait, the directives of Saddam Hussein on the destruction of Kuwait's remaining oil fields, orders to keep the civilian population under control with the trigger, quote, end quote. Now, I know what you guys are saying. You're saying what I said in 1990. This is a war for oil. Why are you guys making this about human rights? It's a big difference between 1990 and today. We had a terror incident on the 11th of September, an attack on our country that necessitates a response. And no, your solution to beat our chests, say mea culpa, have a roundtable discussion on national public radio, and go to the United Nations and grease up. Sorry, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that, so you might as well put that one up. No, this is our response against one of the world's great blood-sucking dictators. Sorry you love him so much that you want to keep him in power. 1-800-449, or you feel sorry for him or something. 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry Show, continuing the cutting-edge commentary, I guess, on the Gulf War. On the proposed war against Iraq. Somebody's got to do it. And this is not a show that is going to indulge stupidly in Democrats versus Republicans talk radio. You're listening to a radio show and a radio host that despises everything that talk radio has traditionally represented. That's why on our radio show, usually we make fun of talk radio. Tonight, and in the days to come, out of respect for our country and what our fighting men and women face, and at the risk of sounding like a super patriot, I'm going to be talking about the proposed war with Iraq. My personal feeling as a Democrat is that it is a good war to fight. It's a just war to fight. And I say I'm a Democrat just so that everybody can chill with that really boring, you conservatives stuff. Just knock it off. This ain't about conservatives or liberals. This, to me, is about people that got brains and people that don't. I'm sorry. I apologize, but As I said yesterday, I don't think anybody's anti-American in this. I don't think that the people who protest the war are anti-American. I just think you're about as dumb as it gets. Frighteningly dumb. Amazingly stupid. In the 21st century, that anybody could be as dumb as the people that opposed this war shocks me. As a matter of fact, Janice, where's that list of the actors and their educational educational background and the people in the administration who support this and who are actively trying to organize this effort against Iraq? Listen to this. You're going to find this really a lot of fun. You're going to find this a lot of fun. Now, here are the people in the administration and just some of their educational background. And as you know, these are people who are in favor of the war with Iraq. President George W. Bush, he's got his bachelor's degree from Yale. He has an MBA from Harvard Business School. He served in the Texas Air National Guard, elected governor of the state of Texas, etc., etc. Vice President Dick Cheney, bachelor's degree in political science, master's degree in political science, won an American Political Science Association Congressional Fellowship. I'm just giving you a few. Secretary of State Colin Powell, bachelor's degree in geology from the City College of New York, participated in the ROTC at CCNY, received a commission as an Army second lieutenant. Further academic achievements include a Master's of Business Administration degree from George Washington University, recipient of numerous U.S. and foreign military awards and decorations. Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Princeton University on a scholarship. Served in the United States Navy as a naval aviator, congressional assistant, assistant to the president, director of the Office of Economic Opportunity. Boom, 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 bing, 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 right? Secretary of Homeland Security Tom Ridge, decorated for valor in Vietnam, received his bachelor's degree, received his MBA. And then we have Condoleezza Rice. Are you ready? Do you want to have you got about an hour? Because I can wait if you want to get coffee or something. Condoleezza Rice is a brilliant woman, as most of us know. Phi Beta Kappa, University of Denver, master's from the University of Notre Dame, PhD from the Graduate School of the International Studies at the University of Denver. She enrolled at the University of Denver, by the way, at the age of 15. She graduated from the University of Denver at the age of 19 with a bachelor's degree in political science, master's degree at the University of Notre Dame, a doctorate from the University of Denver's Graduate School of International Studies. Both of her advanced degrees are also in political science, a fellow of the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. She's been awarded honorary doctorates from Morehouse in 1991, the University of Alabama in 1994, the University of Notre Dame in 1995. At Stanford, she's been a member of the Center for International Security and Arms Control, a senior fellow of the Institute of International Studies, a fellow by courtesy of the Hoover Institute. Her books include Germany Unified and Europe Transformed in 1995 with Philip Zelikow, The Gorbachev Era 1986, An Uncertain Allegiance, The Soviet Union and the Czechoslovak Army 1984. What kind of a brain have you got to have to like write a book about the Soviet Union and the Czechoslovak Army? That's a real specialized area of understanding. A member of the Commonwealth Club, director and senior director of the Soviet and East European Affairs and National Security Council, special assistant to the President for National Security Affairs. This woman is eminently qualified. She is profoundly educated. That's just Condoleezza Rice. I took about three times the amount of time I needed on the rest of those guys to say her credentials. Those are the people that are guiding our country right now. Now let's take a look at the other side of the story, shall we? Here are some of the celebrities. Sorry, but that's who they are. We're against the war with Iraq. Barbara Streisand completed high school career singing and acting. Cher dropped out of school in the ninth grade, singing and acting. Martin Sheen flunked exam to enter the University of Dayton, actor. Jessica Lange dropped out of college mid-freshman year, acting. Alec Baldwin dropped out of George Washington University, acting. Julia Roberts got her high school degree, acting. Sean Penn, high school degree, acting. Susan Sarandon, a degree in drama from Catholic University of America in Washington, acting. Ed Asner completed high school, acting. George Clooney dropped out of the University of Kentucky, actor. Michael Moore dropped out first year University of Michigan, movie director. Sarah Jessica Parker completed high school, actor. Jennifer Aniston completed high school, actor. Mike Farrell completed high school, actor. Janine Garofalo dropped out of college, stand-up comedian. And Larry Hagman attended Bard College for a year, actor. Now, excuse me while I wipe my ass with... Oh, I'm sorry. Are you putting me on? Well, we're Americans and we have a right. Absolutely. Nobody's saying you don't. Nobody's saying you don't. Say all you want, and I will stand for your right to protest. But I reserve the right to make fun of you. I reserve the right to make you look like a jackass. Flunked out in the ninth grade. Actor. Oh, baby. Oh, man. Yeah, you guys got it all pulled together, don't you? Ed Asner. I would have figured Ed Asner for a guy that had a little bit of college. But he, you know, with that punch-drunk kisser of his, he just barely got out of high school. He took tin shearing or something, and then they threw his ass at a body shop, and he went off to acting class. Looked like a bartender to me. George Clooney. One of those guys with that set jaw and that good-looking face, and in the movies he plays a professor, a college professor, something. He dropped out of the University of Kentucky. Now that's, you know, he didn't drop out of Notre Dame or Harvard. He dropped out of the University of Kentucky. You know, that's like, I don't know, that's like quitting ukulele lessons or something. I mean, how tough is it? Alec Baldwin dropped out of George Washington University. But the one that I like here, Larry Hagman, attended Bard College for a year. The hell? Sounds like it's an acting school, isn't it? Bard College, some kind of poet deal? I'm not anti-intellectual. Please, you know, I mean, which all of you people I'm sure would assume that you're very intellectual people, but, you know, your background is in acting. You're obviously proficient at that. Whatever value that has for our society, and it has quite a bit when it comes time for us to sort of let some steam off and relax, take a little comfort in the theater, take a little comfort in the cinema. We like to do that. It's good. I don't like it when Sheen says this. I'm speaking for a lot of people who don't have a voice. So, in other words, the actors step up to the plate. Don't you think it'd be a little bit better if somebody was, the, you know, stepping up to the plate? For the people who don't have any voice, he says actors speak for them. So basically what you're saying is the people who don't have any voice are dumbasses. Allow me, Martin Sheen, I dropped out of high school or whatever the hell he did, to stand up and speak for you. Maybe we could get somebody with a college education, Mr. Sheen?
No, I've got it under control.
Mr. Sheen, I don't exactly agree with the war in Iraq, but I would kind of like a guy who maybe completed 4 years of college.
Forget about it. And now, Jessica Lange.
Hey.
Sean Penn, who goes to Iraq, gets his picture taken by the Iraqi Ministry of Fear, comes back here, the Iraqi Ministry of Fear plasters it all over the newspaper, and this dumbass is acting surprised. His agent is, well, we have no idea how that happened. If we would have known. I love that. The Hollywood Group is at it again, holding anti-war rallies, screaming about the Bush administration, running ads in major newspapers, etc., calling the president stupid, a moron, and an idiot. Which, by the way, that's what they called Lincoln, as I like to say on this show a lot. Just, I'd like to drive that one home. They called Lincoln a moron. I ain't saying George Bush is Lincoln, okay? But just be careful how you word things. Calling them stupid, morons, and idiots. Jessica Lange went so far as to tell a crowd in Spain that she hates President Bush and is embarrassed to be an American. Why do you guys do that in Europe? Why don't you come here and do it? What's the point of telling the Spanish that? What the hell's the point of that? What's the point of one of them, that Dixie chick, the little one, standing up in London and saying that? Why don't you say it here, where it'll make some sense, where there will be people hearing it who might, you know, I don't know what they'll do with information like that, but it'll mean something to them. Jessica Lange went so far as to tell a crowd in Spain she hates President Bush and is embarrassed to be an American and embarrassed to have done her last four movies. Now,
Anyway, so who are these celebrities? What is their education? Jessica Lange, she dropped out of college mid-freshman year. Actor. Obviously, guys, you need to get this and get it good. And I tell my kids this. I'm in the radio business. Well, what does that mean? It means I'm an entertainer. That's what it means. I don't give a crap if I'm a news talk host or what Phil Hendry is, who's kind of a joker, a comedian, or a disc jockey or anything else. I don't care if I'm George Will or I'm an entertainer. That's what we do. We kill, as the great Howard Beale said in the movie Network, we kill boredom for 3 hours. That's all we do. I have no college degree. I got out of high school. There you go. I make more money. I make a lot more money than some men with master's degrees. You know, do I feel guilty about that? Not really. That's the value that society has put on me. They have valued my service, me, Phil Hendry, no education, over some poor guy out there who may have a master's, a doctorate, for all I know, in communications. Now here comes the dumbasses in Hollywood. They're about the same, you know, I'm like them. You know, they got no education. They got nothing. And they stand up and speak for the disenfranchised. They say they're speaking for the people who don't have a voice. Say, gee, thanks. Thank you very much. You don't, are you against the war? I'll speak for you. If you don't mind, I have a college degree. No, no, I'll do it.
Hi, I'm Ed Asner.
And now, Michael Moore. And now, Martin Sheen. Never mind, Marty. You have another heart attack, man. You know. And by the way, Martin Sheen, will you knock it off with the John Kennedy thing? I hate listening to your voice when you do accents. You're a good actor, just straight ahead. When you do that Massachusetts thing and that whole Robert E. Lee bit, oh, my God. Did you see that? Whoo! Open a window. Oh, baby. That Gettysburg was bad enough, but when they had Sheen playing Robert E. Lee, I thought I was going to gag. Just do the regular voice that you do. And he wants to be Kennedy so bad, now he's even playing a president. See, you can play a president and have flunked out of the third grade, like he did. All right, we're going to take a break here. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. This is extended, in-depth, proficient, precise, contextual commentary on the coming war with Iraq from what is ordinarily a funny show, The Phil Hendry Show. 1-800-449-8686. We'll be right back.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
There's a very cool book, and I mean it's a very interesting book. It's called The World's Most Dangerous Places. It was written by Robert Young Pelton, and it is a book. It's kind of a travel guide to the world's biggest garbage pit countries, the biggest toilets on Earth. It's places where you wouldn't think to go. In other words, there's not, you know, you're not looking at Hawaii or the Bahamas or something. This is like, they have a chapter on Afghanistan. They have a chapter here on Bosnia and Herzegovina. And there's an extensive chapter on Iraq. And the guy says, Iraq right now is one of the world's greatest travel bargains. However, you'd have a hard time finding things to buy, no matter what the budget you're on. But if you want to top your tank off, you're in luck. The collapse of the Iraqi dinar, which is the Iraqi rate of currency, from its official rate of about $3.20 to its real rate of about 1,000 times less, means that when you buy a full tank of gas in Iraq using dinars, you pay less than one American penny for a full tank of gas. That's how absolutely valueless their money is. Gasoline costs 0.0009 cents a gallon, or 0.07 dinars a liter. But if you make other transactions at the official rate, beware, don't reach out and touch someone. Telephone calls from Baghdad to the United States can cost $158 a minute. The embargo on Iraq, imposed after Iraq's invasion of Kuwait, And a scarcity of U.S. dollars is pulling the value of Iraq's currency to the value of used Charmin. In a country where educated people make about 2,000 to 3,000 dinars a month, $2 to $3, there is little to buy and even less to buy it with. Just imagine a country where a crisp U.S. $100 bill will bring you nearly 5,000 25 dinar notes. After the Gulf War, Allied forces destroyed, neutralized, or captured 41 of the 42 Iraqi army divisions in the war zone of Kuwait and southern Iraq. The coalition estimated the number of Iraqi prisoners of war at 175,000 and the number of Iraqi casualties at 85 to 100,000 out of an estimated 500,000 soldiers positioned in the combat area. Iraq lost 3,700 of its 5,500 main battle tanks, 1,857 of its 7,500 armored vehicles, and 2,140 of its 3,500 artillery pieces. Jesus, they got their ass kicked. 41 of their 42 divisions were captured or neutralized. 97 of Iraq's 689 combat aircraft and 6 of its 489 helicopters were destroyed. And you know why? Because when the Gulf War broke out, the first thing the Iraqi pilots did is they flew the jets into Iran. They didn't even engage American aircraft. They took off and ran and tried to save the aircraft. Iraq currently possesses approximately 9,000 pieces of military equipment, including trucks, jeeps, armored personnel carriers, and missiles, as well as perhaps 6,000 civilian items. These items were supposed to have been returned under the 1991 UN Security Council resolution, and those are just the harmless things in Saddam's inventory. He otherwise has 6 fully operational ballistic missiles, 25 more hidden and stashed away, and 1 nuclear bomb minus its fissile core. Meaning fissible material? The reader will also sleep better knowing that Saddam has still got VX nerve gas, a mobile biological weapons production facility, and freeze-dried anthrax, any of which will kill most of New York in a matter of minutes. Well, there you go. Hope I made you sleep better tonight. We'll be right back. Our number is 1-800-449. Of course, it's all propaganda, right? Isn't that right, my September 10th people? Yeah, it's all just a lot of propaganda. We made it all up, man, because we just want to go out and kick somebody's ass because we're bored, right? Things aren't exciting enough around here. Why don't we go down and pick on poor old Saddam? 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The Bill Henry Show is back.
Where you will get commentary and news about the forthcoming war with Iraq, and you'll get the same kind of incisive commentary you got following 9/11. You're not going to have to sit and listen to me badmouth some cat in Congress. But I don't know from that stuff. All I know is when things are serious and when things are, when we need to get some perspective on the really important stuff, like whether the country is under attack or whether our soldiers are going to be safe. And another thing about the potential war with Iraq is the possibility not only of casualties among our men, which will occur, but it's also the casualties among the civilian populace. Now, I said this on the air yesterday. I don't know if anybody heard this, but I want to repeat this. I know this generation of Americans especially thinks that you should be able to fight a war without killing anybody. It's not possible. I've looked at the question upside and down. I have talked to military professionals. No one seems to know if it's possible to fight a war where no one dies. I just don't know if it's going to happen. Now, this is really important because this ain't the Gulf War. We're not going to be swooping in, and then it's going to be just one big, long track meet to Baghdad. When we get to Baghdad,
depending upon this Siegfried line that Saddam has set up, and I have no idea what he's got in store for our guys when they hit this so-called ring of defense around Baghdad. I don't know whether if that's where he's placed his chemical artillery. I don't know if that's where he's placed his biological artillery. I don't know if that's where he has placed a lot of anti-personnel stuff, a lot of, you know, the bouncing Bettys that the Germans use. Those are rubber balls. They're landmines. They jump up in the air, and they explode about knee level, so they'll take both your legs off. Really a beautiful thing that the Germans came up with. I don't know what the guys are facing. There's no doubt we have our engineers that will go in and try to clear the way so that when we do get to Baghdad, it becomes a street fight. And as I mentioned the other day, the first rule of street fighting is you stay out of the street. You get inside the houses, you're blowing holes open from one wall to the next, moving from one house to the next. This is a city of 5 million people the size of Los Angeles. That's a whole lot of town. That ain't, you know, no, it could be a week. Could be a week before we get that thing chilled out. And you don't just run right in there. You have to have a plan. A battle plan of some kind. I'm sure it's going to involve the Blackhawks. I'm sure it's going to involve some special forces as well as our regular infantry. I'm sure it will involve just brutal house-to-house fighting. I'm sure in some instances we may be able to get some assistance from surface-to-air missiles. But the point is that it's going to entail a lot of fighting, and there's going to be some dead Americans. You're just going to have to face the facts. And if we get a casualty rate of, say, let's say we lose, it's possible in a battle like that we could lose 3,000 to 4,000 guys. You can't fight a war where people don't get killed. Every single dead civilian now is used as an example of America's war crimes. You know, the hyperbole can only be engaged in by an overindulged generation of Americans like this one, where everything is a war crime. Fart in the wrong direction, war crime. Let me tell you something. I've been around some pretty bad-smelling farts. Some of them could have been war crimes, but ain't nothing we're doing over here is. Sit in a room with Chris Pelton long enough, and you'll be calling the Nuremberg trials again. But nothing we're doing over here is a war crime. War crime, Nuremberg, Nazis, take a look at the concentration camps. Purposeful, systematic, intentional, brutalization, torture, genocide, state-sponsored, war crimes, crimes against humanity, crimes against the peace, crimes against war crimes. These are specifically defined. A civilian dying from collateral damage is not a war crime, no matter how you want to twist it. Maybe some of these September 10th people wouldn't die for anything. Maybe there's nothing they'd die for. They just want to hang on to their cup of coffee. They just want to hang on to their, they want to hang on to their SUV. You know, my sister-in-law is a perfect example of the September 10th anti-war people. She's out there with 250,000 other idiots in the streets of San Francisco protesting the war, and then she's at home crying because she doesn't own an SUV and all her friends do. There you go. That's the bourgeois, that's the petite bourgeois modern posing anti-war movement. All right, now for some phone calls. I have a couple hanging on from Canada. First from Ontario. Kevin, hi.
Hi, Phil. How are you tonight?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. Just a quick comment. Shocked by my country's lack of a stance in not standing shoulder to shoulder with our two greatest allies in the United States and England. As it stands right now, they're hiding behind that chicken UN resolution. And the greatest catch is everyone knows our military is almost completely depleted. It's not like the USA or Britain would have asked for very much. Send over whatever you got, 100 troops, a couple of ships. And, you know, we could have got the dividends from it afterwards. Now we're looking at a relationship between the two countries that is rapidly falling apart. I'm afraid of the ramifications.
Nah, you know, U.S. and Canada are going to be okay. I mean, it's tough for Americans not to like Canada. You know, just is. And the fact is the Canadians were with us in Afghanistan. They don't want to be with us in this thing primarily because that prime minister you guys have, wow.
That we re-elect time and time again.
Yeah, what's up with him? My producer, Janice Ngaro, is from Vancouver, and she's in there right now with her little ski cap eating a cookie. I don't know what she's doing. But Janice is a very proud Canadian. She really is. I mean, she comes in with her Canada gear a lot of times, and she speaks fondly of her home. And my family is originally from Toronto, my father and mother. And they moved to California in the late 40s. But I think that there's a big gulf between the average Canadians that I know and that I've traveled with and the government stance. And Canada's government is one that seems to want to always kind of suck the kneecaps of Britain or Europe. And I think Canada is a North American country. It is not a European country. I think they ought to stop trying to be European up there and be what they are. They're a new world country. And you know what I'm saying? Like I said, they were with us in Afghanistan. I'm sure they'll be with us again, but right now it's everybody wants to go along with what the frogs are saying, and they ain't saying much.
Well, from this this Canadian and many others that I'm in contact with, the people I speak to every day, we're just shocked and ashamed of this government stance and not standing shoulder to shoulder with our best friend and greatest ally just across the border, 10 minutes from here.
Not a problem, man. We'll be up there for the be up there for the start of the Blue Jay season or something. Thanks for calling. Okay? Bye. He hung up on me. Blue Jays suck. I don't know why you brought them up. Canada's all right. I was in China with a bunch of Canadians. You know, we were riding our bikes. There's some Yanks and there were some Canadians. We were all hanging and, you know, having a good time. And one of the Canadian women thought she was related to me because I brought up the fact that my family was from Toronto. And that we wound up having some kind of an affair. I'm not even sure why. Why would you have an affair with someone you're related to? I may be your sister. Let's have sex. All right. Is that what you do in Canada? Fine with me. All right. Here's Zach. Hello, Zach.
Hi. How are you?
Good, man. How's it going?
It's going fine, actually.
Good.
My question, you know, I've heard many crap on the media, and I just wanted to know, asking you a question, what is the main reason, you know, U.S. going after Iraq? Like, just give me an answer, and I hope that I could be able to reply to your answer.
The most visible primary sponsor of terrorism, state sponsor of terrorism in the world today.
Okay. What do you think? Okay, can I reply?
Oh, I thought you were just asking me a question. I didn't know you were going to reply.
What do you think that's happening in Palestine and Israel right now?
Right now, it's quite a tragic set of circumstances. However, for the United States, for America, our priority has to do with 9/11.
Okay.
All right. Now, I don't know if, you know, that makes any difference to you guys in Toronto, but, I mean, it was kind of a big thing here.
Well, what I'm saying is that America is supporting the Israeli system, killing Palestinian people. They're both killing from each other. And that America is supporting Israel, the Israeli system.
Are you Arab or something? I'm just curious. I really want to know. How did you settle upon, in your life and in your travels and in just the man that you are, how did you settle upon the... you decided one day that Israel was the primary aggressor in the Middle East. I want to ask you, how did you come to that conclusion?
The reason is that the Palestinians in 1948, they accepted the Israelis as immigrants, and all of a sudden they turned over and took over the country. Now, how would that be? It's like the Indians, you know, Britain coming over and taking over the land, the Indian land, you know, the native Indians. That's the same comparison.
All right, well then why don't we all leave and go back to, I'm from Ireland, where are you from?
I'm from, actually, Syria.
Are you prepared to leave Canada? Give it back to the Indians? Oh, well, a little different, isn't it? Oh, no.
A little different
when you sink some roots, isn't it? Now, the Middle East, when it has to do with the Israelis, as you know, the partition created by the United Nations was rejected by the Arab states. There was a war. Israel was attacked, if you wish to call it that, or you can say that there was an uprising against the occupational Zionists. Whatever, the attackers or the uprisers lost. After they lost that initial war, then they went back to the UN and said, no, you know what? I think we now will accept that partition. Oh, really? Well,
but
that's not
why, right?
Why? Because they weren't going to throw the Jews into the ocean. What else are they going to do?
Well, the reason that you're not really fighting Israel, you're fighting the states and Israel. And listen to this statement. Listen to this statement. That's the statement from the Arabic countries. Not who fights occupation considered terrorists. That's what I'm saying.
Zach, I want to ask you something, man. In all seriousness, I have never in my life lived in a world until now where a nation of 5 million who have been constantly and consistently attacked by a pan-Arabic unity of 500 million are considered to be the Nazis, and the 500 million, these are the oppressed. Don't you, even as an educated man, don't you see how silly and idiotic and almost completely and utterly through the looking glass that is? They have been attacked time and again. Look at the Egyptians, the Arabic states have tried their solution. What was it? Well, in 1968 and in other years, attack Israel, drive them into the ocean. The combined forces of Syria, Egypt, Jordan, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. They couldn't win at a fair fight. So now they're going to try something else. They're going to send suicide bombers in there. But through it all, the propaganda mill churns out this Israeli occupational Nazi force. The Israelis, war criminals, the Israelis, the Zionists, the Jews, the this and the that. The worst characterizations I've ever heard in my life coming out of Saudi Arabia, calling Jews pigs and monkeys. It's like World War II all over again.
But don't you think that Israel by itself cannot fight the Middle East? There's someone, some other power behind the Israelis. And, like,
Zach, wait, who are you talking about? Are you talking about America giving Israel money? Is that what you're talking about?
No, not money, actually. They're giving them the manpower.
You know, of course, during the Cold War, that Egypt, Syria, other states in the Middle East were getting manpower. No, they're not giving them manpower. What are you talking about? They're giving them equipment, I think, is what you meant to say.
Weapons and manpower as well.
I won't argue with you on that. You realize, of course, that the Soviet state was supplying Egypt, Syria, and other Middle East countries. You know
that's
that,
true.
Don't you? Okay. So, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about the Israelis getting weapons from the Americans.
What about the Egyptians who got weapons from the Soviets? What about the Syrians who got weapons and advisors from the Soviets? What about the Jordanians?
They have the right to fight this occupation.
Oh, so they get to have their weapons, and now, stick to one part of the argument, or let's just call it a day.
No, I'll stick to the argument. Okay?
All right, the argument was that Israel is not a fair fight. That's what that was the argument. You said it wasn't a fair fight.
Okay, I understand your point, but my point would be, they came in, you know, to the country, to Palestine, to occupy it with no right. Okay, and
your ass is sitting in a country right now occupying land that once belonged to the Indians with no right.
Well, you know, I feel sorry for the Indians.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I feel sorry for the Palestinians.
Well, you should, then. You shouldn't support them, right?
Well, then you should support the Indians, right?
Well, I should, and I'm proud. You know what? I'm proud to see and be friends with every Indian because
get
they
the hell
have.
Out of, they don't want you to be their friend. They want your ass out of there.
No, I don't think so. Not for me. I'm not their enemy.
Well, the Jews are not the enemies of the Palestinians. The Israeli farmers were trying to reach out to the Syrian farmers, that green line, to help them plant their crops and to help them grow their... And what do they get for the trouble? They get shot at. That's what they get for the trouble.
That's what
anytime
he gets
the Israelis...
Occupying...
I'm sorry?
That's what he gets for occupying somebody's land.
Wait a minute.
You know,
just a minute ago, you told me... Just a minute ago, you told me that you were friends with all the Indians. You'll understand, of course, if they take a shot at you. That's what you get for occupying their land.
See, the Indians... The Indians didn't have the weapons and the power to drive the...
So
the
then it was okay for you to come in and kick their ass.
Well, if they're occupying my land, would you like the states to be occupied by Russia?
Why are you sitting on the Indians' land right now, Zach? And you ain't even from Canada.
Why?
Yeah.
Because I'm looking for a free land.
Hey, dude,
a land that
guess what?
Gives me
freedom. Get your ass out of Canada. You're on the Indians' land.
But I'll tell you something, okay?
Okay. You know, it's very convenient. It's very convenient. And if you're looking for...
I've never talked to an Indian that minds me being here.
I know plenty of
Indians.
Hey, Zach, if you'd like to meet some Indians that mind you being there, you just call me. I'll introduce you to a ton.
Actually, I'm married to a half-Indian lady.
I don't care. We're all half Indian. I will introduce you to a ton of Indians who would like you to park your ass someplace else. I guarantee it. If you'd like to meet them, I'll introduce you.
Okay, that's cool.
Okay. Really? We'll go to a prison in Minnesota for starters. And from there, we'll spread out. Thanks for calling there, Zach. Zach is from Syria. He's looking for a place to be free. I guess it ain't Syria. 1-800-449-8686. However, the Indians are going to have to like it up there in Canada. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
1-800-449-8686. I'm going to come back here with more. President Bush was supposed to have spoken this evening. I don't know whether he is or whether he isn't, what he's going to say. I think it's a lot of, again, there's a lot of reporting that's going on that's pretty sloppy, but it's par for the course in the hours and the minutes ahead of any big event or while a story is breaking. Now, you watch what happens when this war begins and this story begins to break. The baloney you're going to hear is going to hit all-time record highs. So if I were you, I would, keep your bullcrap detector on a tune pretty high. Double-check and triple-check whatever you hear. And we're going to be back here after a short break. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Many of you tuning in to hear our usual comedic presentation as we prepare for war. We don't think it's appropriate. We are going to be giving you our take on the news and events as we see it, and we generally do it better than anybody else, so why not? 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
It's really interesting. Hussein sent Scuds into Israel in the Gulf War, killed Israeli civilians with those Scuds. Now, Israel did bomb his nuclear reactor, so I suppose that's, what is that? Does that make them even? The fact is, Israel has been under attack since the country came into existence. The country came into existence as the result of a need on the part of the world to find a home for Jews. Jews have been driven out of every country they've ever been in because I guess it has something to do with killing Jesus. And just for the fact, just to set the record straight, I don't care if you guys killed Jesus. Doesn't make it a damn bit of difference to me. Guy was supposed to be killed, according to the Christians. So I don't care whether you killed Jesus or not. I got no problem with you. But the rest of the world did. And down through the years, the Crusades blamed them for the plague, and they thought they were poisoning the wells, and they didn't allow them to own any land, and they didn't allow them to belong to any tradesmen's guilds, and they didn't allow them to be farmers. And so the only thing left to the Jew was to be a shopkeeper and maybe a money changer. And they were allowed to charge interest by the church because they were considered to be human beings, and so they didn't fall under the laws of human beings. But they had to kick back some of the money to the church. And down through the years, they've been manipulated, and they learned to play the game. The Holocaust of World War II is just one chapter in what has happened down through the years to Jews. In any event, a lot of people don't want to hear that story because they think it's all made up. Yeah, you're right. It's just a completely concocted. In any event, the United Nations decided to solve the problem by partitioning Palestine and giving part of it to immigrant Jews from Europe, some of whom had already been settling for decades in Palestine. You may be interested to know that Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister of Israel, was born in Palestine. He was born in Palestine in the 20s. He's not from Europe. He wasn't born in Israel. He was born in Palestine. They partitioned that land. It was completely rejected by the Arabs. They said, no way, no way, baby. You ain't partitioning anything. This belongs to us. And a war started. Israel was attacked from all sides, as we've come to find Israel has done so many times after that. They repelled the attackers. The war ended. The Arabs hadn't driven the Jews out, even though they had wanted to drive the Jews into the sea. They wanted to exterminate the Jews, something the Jews had been hearing for years before in Europe anyway. It's funny how readily the Arab states fell into that whole Jew hate thing. It just really, it comes naturally to some people, I guess. So then they went back to the UN and they said, we want to now accept the partition. Well, a funny thing happened after that war. The Israelis got a little bit more of Palestine, and the Palestinians got a little bit less. That's what happens in war. And since the Palestinians and the Arabs turned around and saw that they weren't getting as much land as they were originally offered in the original partition plan, they went back to the UN and said, we'd now like that partition plan. And the Israelis said, you can pound it straight up your you-know-what. You attack us? Well, that's a thumbnail sketch of exactly how it started. Who do I support? It's hard for me. It's difficult for me to be on the side of a people who have allowed dictator after dictator to lie to them, manipulate them, steal from them, propagandize against Israel, and these people take it all in as gospel. It's very difficult for me to be on the side of a leadership, at least. I'm not against the Arab people, but their leaders. It's tough for me to be on their side. The Arab leaders are the worst collection of scum to have collected since the old Iron Curtain days. It's tough for me to be on their side. Assad, Nasser, inept, Bozo the clowns, their military's a joke. They're embarrassing. Little tiny Israel kicks their ass, not in one war, not in two wars, three, four wars. It's difficult for me to be on the side of people like that. It's easy for me to be on the side of a democratic society, or one that is at least struggling very, very hard to remain, like Israel, in the midst of almost a continuous martial law, where they are almost under continuous attack. How do you sustain democratic institutions and at the same time maintain the security of the state? It's pretty tough. Sometimes you make mistakes. Sometimes people die. You know what? Tough. What you ought to do is you ought to get that guy Arafat out of there and start getting serious. The guy is not trustworthy. He has not served the Palestinian people. The biggest problem the Palestinian people have got isn't Israel. It isn't the United States. It's not. It is not the European Union. It is Yasser Arafat and the rest of the Arab leadership lying to them, underserving them, mocking them with their inept leadership. That's the biggest problem the Palestinian people have today. This scumbag Arafat, who makes a deal on the one hand and 2 days later goes back on it, who can't keep his word if he had a gun put to his head, who is a clown. And the Palestinian people would rather spend a lot of time talking about Israel being an oppressive regime, committing war crimes. They would rather engage in that kind of chit-chat than get down to what's really important here, changing their leadership and getting some kind of leadership in that part of the world that is going to move them forward, not backward. They'd rather engage in pumping their fist in the air and, all of this death to the USA, death to the Zionist entity crap that they've been engaging in for the last 60 years that hasn't gotten them anywhere. Let me ask you a question. What if as much energy had been put into building a culture and building a country as has been put into trying to run the Jews into the ocean? What kind of a people and what kind of a state do you think the Palestinians would have today? If they had put as much energy into building, and the other Arab countries had contributed to that building as they put into plotting and scheming how they're going to kill the Jews. Even Muammar Gaddafi, who is a real clown, even he said, you know what? The Palestinians should take an example from the Jews. Jews have flourished in every society that they have ever been members of. Why can't the Palestinian, the Arab people, flourish in Israeli society? Because in 30 or 40 years, it ain't going to make any difference with all of the intermarrying. It's going to be an Arab state anyway. You think there's anybody smart enough to figure that out besides Arafat sitting there in his circus tent? No. All right. One, anyway, I got way off on Israel. I don't know how I got off on that kick, but the guy wanted to get on because it always comes back to that, doesn't it? It always comes back. And I guess Saddam Hussein's the great champion of the Israeli, of the Palestinian people, right? Yeah, he's going to really help you guys. Well, you know what? I mean, if anybody was planning on walking into a pizza parlor and blowing themselves up because it's an easy 35 grand for your family, I'd look around for a job because you're going to be flat out of money here in a few hours. There won't be any more 35 G's coming your way from old Saddam. As you know, the president was supposed to speak this evening. Actually, I don't know whether he was supposed to speak or not. I think Fox News screwed it up, if you want my honest opinion. I think they're doing what they usually do, just reporting a whole lot of nothing. I don't think Bush was going to speak at all. But we were expecting it. The deadline has passed. Saddam Hussein was supposed to have gotten out of the country, and he ain't, I don't know where he is. Maybe he is. How do we know that he's not? Just because he didn't let us know. Yeah, just give us a call. We're not going to trace the call.
Yeah.
It's a small world after all.
This is Saddam.
And it's a small world after all. Well, okay. All right, 1-800-449-8686. Bill, hi.
Hey, Phil, this is Bill. I'm just calling to say I think the media is taking a serious issue and making it almost into a production like a sporting event. I mean, I half expect to see Al Michaels interviewing Saddam Hussein in the Iraqi locker room before the war. I mean, I think they're just going way too far. And I think, damn all you people that are watching it and minute by minute and buying into all this.
Buying into what?
I mean, I know it's a serious war and everything, but I think NBC and Fox are just making it way too big of a production and just selling it to all the people. I mean, why would you want to watch that? I just don't know.
Because it's interesting? Because it's important to the country?
Well, it is important to the country, but you need to know every single thing that's going on.
Kind of. I do, because of the job that I got.
I know that job you have, but the way they put it out, I mean, I have a brother that's over there, and that's the last thing I want to watch is all of a sudden you see American casualties, and you just sit there and wonder.
I could understand how you feel that way. If you got a brother there, I could understand that.
And I mean, I understand you got to cover it, but if you saw
There is a sporting event aspect to it that is undeniable. Sometimes I think it's because the only experience that the news organizations have covering an event like this is through their sports department. So they just, well, gee, it looks like a football game. Let's just cover it like one, you know. And there is a detachment that we have as Americans to this event. I don't think it's going to be possible to remain detached. I got to be honest with you, Bill. People sometimes criticize and say, well, you know, people are watching this and they think it's just a sporting event. I think tonight most Americans have got a ball in the pit of their stomach.
Oh yeah, they
much
should.
Much like the one that we have before we the analogy was used earlier this evening to me. Before we take a test, we know we're going to ace the test. We know we're going to do well. We studied, but we still get that ball in our stomach. That nervousness in our stomach that we just want to go, we just want to do, and we want to get it over with. So I don't think that there's any flip or I don't think that there's any sense among the American people that this is some kind of, you know, just light event. I think people have got their guts in a knot tonight, and I do. My guts are in a knot. I know we're going to do well. I know that it's important, and I know that it's righteous and it's moral, and there's nothing wrong with what we're about to do. But my stomach is in a knot. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I just saw a picture of some Iraqi citizens sitting behind sandbags in Baghdad, and they are men who look to be in their late 50s to early 60s. And I got to tell you something, I felt horrible for them. Now, you may say, yeah, easy for you to say, Henry, you're the guy that supports bombing the hell out of those guys. No, I don't. I think those old guys are probably smarter than they look. I bet you they got that white flag stuffed in the back of their pocket, and when the time is right, out it comes. I mean, Hussein's got these poor old guys manning the sandbags. Where's he? Meanwhile, this from Associated Press, hundreds of armed members of Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party and security forces deployed Wednesday throughout Baghdad, taking positions behind sandbags and in foxholes ahead of the U.S. ultimatum for the Iraqi leader to leave or face war. There was no sign during the day of regular army troops, however, and as the deadline approached, nearly half of the Ba'ath loyalists were gone from the almost deserted streets. Al-Shabaab Television, owned by Saddam's son, Odai, showed an American movie late Wednesday. Do you see the irony in all of this? Don't you see? What movie was it? They showed an American movie Wednesday. It was Ishtar. Now, anyway, I don't know what it was. Mrs. Doubtfire. We're living in a nutty world. America, the greatest rottenest Hitler in the history of time, the really rotten, stinking Americans, and everybody's watching our movies, even as we're getting ready to kick their ass. Earlier, Al-Shabaab, the most watched station in Iraq, broadcast... The most watched station in Iraq, Al-Shabaab, Channel 3. Stay tuned for Sheriff John. The most watched station in Iraq broadcast hours of patriotic songs and extensive archive footage of Saddam greeting crowds and firing off a rifle, and then showed a rerun of Magnum Force. In the city, almost every store was shut and traffic was light as residents continued to stream out of the capital heading for the relative safety of the countryside. Iraqi, can you imagine if you're a father of children and a wife? What are you doing? You're getting them in that car and you're getting their ass out of there. If you got anywhere else to go, you got a relative out in the country. That's what you do. You stay away from where the main fighting's going to be. Go far away. In the city, almost every store was shut. Traffic was light. Residents continued to leave the capital. Iraqi officials, however, remained defiant in the face of about 300,000 U.S. and British and Australian troops, backed by 1,000 warplanes and a fleet of warships, all ready for an attack on Iraq to rid it of weapons of mass destruction. There you go. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Maged.
Yes, hello.
Is it Maged, sir?
Yeah, it's Maged, yeah.
Oh, Maged, I'm sorry.
It's all right. I'm a Middle Eastern, and I've been listening to your whole show. You're very, very knowledgeable about the Israeli-Middle Eastern crisis that's going on. I think you just skipped one point, which is that since the Israeli population has been in the area there in Palestine, they've tried to take over a lot of land from the Middle East, and I'm Egyptian, and they have invaded Egypt for over 10 years until we kicked them out of the country, and then they invaded Lebanon, and then they invaded Syria. So it's
how do you pronounce your name, sir?
My name is Maged.
Okay.
So I think that a lot of the American population just feel sorry for the Israelis. Sir, for every single suicide bomber that kills 10 Israelis, the Israelis on the other side kill thousands and thousands of Palestinians. And the problem is that the media here does not show this. And the only way that we can talk is through these radio shows. And there is people like you who are understanding and very knowledgeable, and these are the people that would understand it.
Majid, how old are you, buddy?
I am 22 years old.
Okay. I don't know how to... No, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. I just was curious. I just wanted to know your perspective on history, how old you were, where, you know, that's all.
We are as Egyptians, and we are as Middle Eastern.
I know you're Egyptian. I know you're Middle Eastern, believe me. I don't have... And with all due respect, you sound like a nice guy, but I don't have a great love for your country. But let me just say this. Majid,
right.
I don't know how to break the news to you. Do you know of a name, Abdul Nasser? Do you know this man?
Yes.
Okay, Nasser's a famous man in your country.
He is.
Nasser, from the time he got into office, let's forget about the first 10 years of the Israelis' occupation of Palestine, however you want to put it.
Right.
From the time he got into office until his defeat in the so-called Six-Day War, he made it clear day in and day out
month in and month out. I have the speeches. I can quote them to you. I can tell you where to go. He was going to drive the Zionist into the ocean. The time for the Zionist was over. This utter disgrace of having them on our land. We were going to exterminate the Jews. We were going to drive them in. Now, I know what you perceive to be an invasion of Lebanon and an invasion of Egypt by the Israelis as something that the Israelis brought on magically by themselves, just decided to get up one morning and say, we really don't like Egyptians, let's go kill them. This, in point of fact, is not true. Egypt threatened, and threatened in very, very strong terms, the very existence of Israel. Israel had no choice. But on a morning in June, as the Egyptian tanks were arrayed in the Sinai, and as their jets were on the runway ready to take off against the Israelis, as the Syrian army was on the move, and the Jordanian army, which the Israelis had begged the Jordanians, please don't attack us. We're begging you. But the Jordanians moved anyway. Israel flew its jets, took out those Egyptian tanks, and began a war of struggle and survival that the Egyptians brought on them. They did not bring it on the Egyptians. 1-800-449-8686. Look up the history. You don't believe me? Look it up. I don't know who you've been talking to, but 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
I don't want to say anything. It was a nice kid that I was talking to, but can you believe the utter garbage that these kids are fed in some of these Arab states I'm talking about? The Israelis attack them? Seriously, even the Arabs ain't going to buy that. They know what they did. What are they teaching the kids? Do they have to lie? Look, if you don't like the Israelis lying about you, or the Americans lying about you, why don't you just try a new tack? Why don't you tell the truth? It's utter nonsense to say to a young person growing up in the school system in the Arab states of the Middle East that the Israelis attacked them. It's utter crap, borne out by the history. It's just the history. Americans want it to be September the 10th. They cannot believe what has happened. As I made the point to my dear old brother-in-law there in London, I said, you know, there are, what is it, four states to accepting death. First there is denial, then there's anger, then there's depression, and then there's acceptance. And what has happened to this country and the world that we have been thrust into since September the 11th is so profoundly upsetting and changing to a lot of Americans. They want this to be back in the 70s, and they want this to be some sort of Vietnam-era adventure. They must believe that this is a Vietnam-era adventure. Otherwise, their world is turned upside down, and they're not ready for it. This ain't 1971, baby. This is a whole new ball game where Americans, 3,000 of them, got murdered, where the President of the United States declared a war on terror, and where in that war on terror we look for the fattest, ripest, biggest, juiciest target, and that's Fat Boy over there with the mustache, that cigar-sucking Hussein. He's the guy that gets it. Knock it off with all of the Vietnam-era rhetoric about the big criminal America. This is a war of survival. And if you don't fight now, I'd like to know when in hell you would. Here is Danny. Danny, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello, Phil.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing? I'm basically against this war. Iraq hasn't done anything to us. They have not been proven that they're delinquent 9/11. Colin Powell basically lied and plagiarized that report. As in 1991, he lied, and he lied in Iran-Contra, and he lied with Mila massacre. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to kill a bunch of civilians for no reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what other way do you say? I mean, are you for having civilians killed? I mean,
no,
basically,
sir.
I mean, I don't
no,
understand.
Sir. No, I'm not.
Whether was it, you know, do you think shock and all? Do you think those bombs are not going to kill those innocent people over there?
Unfortunately, some people may die. Yes, sir.
Unfortunately, some people may die. Yeah,
yes.
You know,
yes.
Soldiers have weapons; they can defend themselves. These people, yeah, 9/11. Okay,
right.
Yeah, go after Iraq. That's what they, you know, okay, go after those people. But they didn't do anything to us. And basically, this is just going to be mass murder. What they're going to do over there? I think.
Well,
Bush, and I'm sorry. I think Bush should be held for war crimes.
Well,
yeah,
you obviously don't know what a war crime is.
Oh, yes, I do. I know about My Lai Massacre.
No, you don't.
And William Calley. Yeah, William Calley got away.
No, you don't.
Yeah, Calley should got away with murder.
No, he didn't. He served time.
He served 3 months, sir.
My Lai, do you know about Nuremberg?
Yeah, I know about Nuremberg. You know about Vietnam and the mass genocide we committed against those people over there? And
I know about Vietnam. And I know the big difference between this and Vietnam.
Yeah,
and
what is the big difference here?
If you're going to start throwing around mass murderer on George Bush, you don't know your history at all.
What about Chile? What about Chile in 1973? What about
I understand
United States
that.
Dominance?
What about it? What about what Hussein has pulled? What about the United Arab Republic has pulled? What about what Syria has pulled? What about what the Soviet Union? Hey, listen, Danny, you want to start pulling it out? Let's pull it out, baby.
Okay.
Come on, all of the crimes by all of the nations and all of the lies that have been told to all of the people. What's the matter, Dan? Don't you want to eat from the buffet? The brand, the wonderful World International Buffet of Lies. America didn't invent it, my brother. We didn't invent this world. We are trying to swim in the same water everybody else is. If you want to pull out the lies and the mass murders of America, then you better be ready to pull out the ones committed by Iraq, Iran, Syria, Egypt, the United Arab Republic, all of the countries of the Soviet bloc, all of the colonialists in Britain and all of the colonialists in France. How far back do you want to go, man? Or do you just want to pick and choose through the historical buffet like most of you September 10th people do?
Yeah.
Just like my brother-in-law, man. He wants to pick through the landmine so he doesn't step on one that might blow his leg off. He just wants to talk about all of the crimes that somebody else committed.
Okay, Phil?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay, the United States, let me leave you with this. The United States will never win a war on terrorism. Do you know why? The United States is the number one terrorist country in the world.
Well, that's a big label that you can't back up either.
That's right.
That's just another one of your broad brush strokes that you can't back up.
I'm with reality, brother.
I don't think you are, though.
No, I think you're not with it. You're part of the 60s? You were part of the
60s. I'm part of the 60s. Man, I live in the 21st century, dude. You're still back there with...
No, I bet you got a beard. I'm still with my... I didn't sell out.
Oh, you're still... Wait a second. Are you still wearing... Let me ask a question. Are you wearing the khaki fatigues with the beard?
No.
Right.
I'm wearing regular clothes. That has nothing to do with it. I keep my idealism. You know why? Because I hope that... Because that's where
you
I am.
You can't change with a changing world. And with every situation
comes a different... So I'm supposed to be...
Danny, comes a different solution. And if you are so static and so inflexible that you apply the same solution to every problem, I feel sorry for you.
I'm all for going after Al-Qaeda. But these people did nothing to us.
Well, I can argue that with you if you let me, but I don't think you want to hear it.
Well, you don't want to hear it.
You think it's better to keep that guy in power
so people can suffer.
No, you don't? Well, then which is it?
No, I don't. I think there was another way of doing it.
Which is the other way of doing it?
There was another way of doing it. Diplomacy, he didn't give diplomacy any time at all.
The guy had 12 years to get rid of his chemical weapons, and today he's got them pointed at our guys.
Hey, Phil, you know what? We're the ones that have weapons of mass destruction. Here we go again.
We're the ones with the weapons of mass destruction. Do you want to solve the problem at hand, or do you want to start going back in history? Because with every example you bring up, you know I can do the same thing. With every example you bring up, I can do the same thing. Or do you want to solve the problem at hand?
This is not going to solve the problem. This domino theory of democracy will not work.
Nobody's talking. I don't believe in that any more than anybody else does.
Right. Well, Bush.
Well, maybe he does, and maybe he doesn't. I tell you what, don't vote for him in 1990, whenever the hell he's running. All right.
For 2004, he didn't even win.
But I will tell you this much: 3,000 Americans were carved up
and
in an act of terror, and the war on terrorism has been a long time coming. We have been so reactive in this war, hiding behind metal detectors and hiding behind security guards and hiding behind all of that stuff. It is time to take the fight to the people who are warring on civilization. Look, man, you can do whatever you want and think whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
When you start taking out civilians, I suppose you think that Cali ought to be exonerated from My Lai.
Cali should have been shot.
No, but you want to give Saddam Hussein a pass, don't you, Danny?
Cali should have been
You want to give Saddam Hussein, you want to go over there and play kissy face with Saddam Hussein, but Cali ought to be shot. What world do you live in, man?
Who's next, Phil? Who's next?
Who's next? Well, if it was me, the Saudi Arabians. Yeah, the Saudi Arabians. They'd be nice. Yeah, they'd be nice. If we find out that if another terror attack takes place on our land, when would you fight? When would you fight? Yeah.
They came over here directly to our shores like a World War II.
They did, you dumbass. It was called 9/11. What the hell is with you? It was called 9/11.
Dumbass, I've talked to you yet.
Yeah, 9/11. They came over and butchered up 3,000 of your countrymen, you freaking coward. 3,000 Americans. When will you fight? Good God. It ain't September 10th. I'm sorry. It's 2003. It's a different world. So you might as well get back in your SUV and drive back home. All you fine little bourgeois moms and all you fine little bourgeois students, and quit playing like it's 1969 and this is the Vietnam War. There are air raid sirens over Baghdad, according to Fox News right now. Air raid sirens over Baghdad, but that doesn't mean anything. That means the Iraqis have fired off air raid sirens. It doesn't necessarily mean that there are aircraft over Baghdad. It just means that the Iraqis could be nervous. They might be testing the system. Or maybe they spotted a plane. I don't know. We'll find out. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry Show. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Henry Show is back.
Ari Fleischer, the press secretary, spoke just moments ago. The announcement is the war against Iraq is on. American forces, air forces, as far as I know, may be launching attacks right now. Fleischer, the press secretary, though, said that the war is on, and the president of the United States is going to speak to the nation at 7:15 Pacific, 10:15 Eastern Time. And we're going to be live tonight through that entire period. Air raid sirens and planes heard in Baghdad. The deadline, of course, was 8 o'clock, which was 8 o'clock Eastern Time, which was 4 a.m. Thursday. The disarmament of the Iraqi regime will begin at the time of the president's choosing, said Ari Fleischer at that time. Okay, so what did he just say is what I'm trying to find out, not what he said 4 hours ago. Air raid sirens, flashes of light, and sounds of planes were seen and heard in the skies over Baghdad as President Bush, as his deadline for Saddam Hussein. You know, this deadline for Hussein to surrender, let's give that up, okay? In any event, the deadline passed unheeded Wednesday night. American-led invasion forces of 300,000 troops await the order to strike. Well, the order apparently has been given. That's the announcement that we just heard from Ari Fleischer, who is the press secretary. And I think, I don't know if you pray. I do. I'm not a Christian. I believe in a different religion, but I believe in a sort of universal law. But it might not be a bad thing to have the mind, to have the well-being of our forces and of the Iraqi people in mind, if you're thinking about anybody tonight, and that these warriors be successful ousting one of the most brutal dictators in history. A man who was a sponsor of international terrorism, which, of course, is a non-combatants or an ununiformed combatants war against non-combatants, against civilians, designed to demoralize civilians. It is a coward's war in many ways, and in many ways it takes a lot of chutzpah to fly a plane into a building, I'll give you that much. But I would think that our thoughts should be with our fighting men and women and with the people of Iraq, that they stay low, that they stay out of harm's way, that the Iraqi military, whatever intelligence is left there, that those guys put their hands up in the air and just come out, surrender their weapons, go back to their barracks. I think it's a great gesture to allow these men to just surrender their weapons and not to become POWs, but to be enabled to go back to their barracks. And I think it gives them a dignity, and I think it might buy us a little goodwill among the Iraqi military. That's the plan anyway. I don't know if any ground troops have been launched yet. I do know that air raid sirens have been heard over Baghdad, and that's it. That's all we know. And the announcement by Ari Fleischer that the attack is on, the war against Iraq has commenced. I think, personally, that this, for the Iraqi people, is a great day. I'm sorry to hear that some people don't think so. Some people think that the UN sanctions that they don't support should be dragged down, that the leadership of one of the world's most notorious terrorists continue. diplomacy that was used by this guy to manipulate and make fools of the world should continue. I'm sorry to hear that some people believe in that. I'm sorry to hear that some people think that 5-10 years more of a Saddam Hussein who brutalizes and tortures his own people is better than perhaps the liberation of the Iraqi people in 30 days. I don't know what they're thinking. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Miram. Miram?
Yes, hi, good evening.
Yes, sir, how are you?
Excellent, and you?
Fine.
Good, okay. I listened to the conversation a little bit earlier to you and the gentleman that says that the Americans are terrorists.
Yes, sir.
And I think that's a little bit harsh stating that the Americans are terrorists, because terrorists can be anybody. But I disagree with you guys getting in an argument and calling each other Howards and things like that. Certain reason. My father was a Vietnam veteran. I grew up in Bosnia. And as we know, Bosnia went through a bunch of trouble from 91 to 96, 97.
How'd you wind up in Bosnia and your dad was an American soldier? I think that's interesting. How'd that happen?
Yeah, okay. My back in the 70s, 60s, 70s, my dad was stationed in Germany.
I see.
And I guess a love story happened. My mom was working in Germany. They connected for a while and then disconnected.
I got you. Okay.
And the product of that is me.
Yes, sir.
Now, unfortunately, I've been in America since 1997, and I was never more proud to be an American than September 11th, when I saw the American nation stood together and go through the problems that America faced. I still disagree that we have to go to Iraq, because I'm going to say a saying that's in my country, and I'm going to try to translate it in English. It might not be...
But let me say it for you, because we had to dump that. If you touch crap, the crap smells even more. Is that accurate?
That is what I meant to say.
Okay, I got you.
Now, a war is not a nice situation. I served military for 4 years. After you fire the first bullet and you kill the first enemy, the question that I face myself with is, do I want to kill him and have my mama, have his mama cry, or do I want to get killed and have my mama cry? It was very easy for me to say, oh no, I don't let my mama cry, I'd rather let his mama cry and kill the first enemy, and after 4 years, how many later after, I can't sleep at night.
Well, I hear you.
I'm only 31 years old. I thought I have the life in front of me. Do I sleep good? No. Do we need to send all those kids across the ocean, across half of the world?
Miram, let me ask you a question. You say you were in the military in Bosnia?
Yes.
What army were you a member of?
I was a member of the Bosnian Army.
Okay. Did you feel, as a member of the Bosnian Army, that you were really fighting for a nation? Did you feel you were fighting for a people or a nation, or were you fighting for survival? How did you feel when you were in a firefight or when you were marching with those men? Was it a unit you'd rather just not be involved with? Were you feeling patriotic?
I was feeling very patriotic. Now, in the beginning, later on, I realized that the government, actually the Bosnian government, that all this is a game of profit and money. In the beginning, it was really patriotism, and a lot of young kids, I'm saying we're young kids because they were 17, 15, 19. They didn't know what the gun is. They took the guns and started defending. But we didn't go to Serbia to kick their asses. We waited for them to come to our part of the land, our streets, our neighborhood, and kick their asses then.
Yeah.
So I would be the first one here that would say, yes, let us defend our shores. Let us defend our streets. Don't let anybody touch my neighbor. But why do we have to send all those troops to Iraq
I'm going to offer an answer. Two things. I think the American fighting man has a lot to fight for. He's got 200 years and a whole lot of that wonderful stuff that we hear about mom and apple pie. The other thing, Miram, is that if we can
go into the rat's nest and neutralize the rat before he starts digging around in our pantry. It's a much better thing to take the enemy out in the nest that he operates from, in the safety of the haven that he thinks he has, or rather than to have him come here, do his damage, and then have to take him out here. I think that that is, in my opinion, and I've said it many times, what this war is about, to take one of those guys out in their nest. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Henry Show. President Bush in 15 minutes.
1-800-449-8686.